Hey, this is, as Dave Edwards calls it, potpourri. But that title that he gave us, you'll think maybe that we are addressing some of that. It will fit that original title of How to Get a Great Man, wasn't that what it was? I told him, I said, we're going to put down there and how we keep a mumble. So anyway, but this is going to be a blend of counsel. Hopefully you, all these girls, as we just sat and discussed this, it was so neat as they just shared this thought and this thought and this thought. So I'm not going to direct anything to any of them. Some of them have questions they'll be reading as we get to the specific topic or the specific subject. And we've divided this into three sections. The girl and guy relationship, a girl and girl relationship, and then just a girl and herself, and the relationship she has to herself. So we're going to try to, we've got a lot of different ideas that go into each one. They may not quite fit, and we may jump back and forth, but hopefully we can kind of tie it together a little bit there. 1 Corinthians 10:13, most all of you know perhaps, it says, there is no temptation that's taken us or taken you, but such as is common to man. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about some things, and we feel like that if some of you have the problem, a lot of you may have the problem. One problem may not be yours that we're going to talk about, but it may be somebody else's. So this is a blend of thoughts and ideas based on, because of the culture in which we live. A lot of these things may not be, we may not be able to biblically base them, but we feel like that in the light of God's Word and what the clear direction that God's Word does give us, that we can make some pretty positive statements, and that the counsel that we give you today in the group would fit with the, God's plan in helping you to find God's plan. So we wanted to, we're going to just start too by laying the groundwork and telling you where we want you to know where we come from as a BSU and as a staff, and why we give you the counsel we give you. And many of you come into the BSU with dating patterns and habits from high school that are totally different than what you're hearing here. And some people think we're very narrow, but there's a reason for that. And we want to, some people think, you know, they've called us, oh, they're the people that don't date over at the BSU. And there's a reason for that. And we want you to know that reason. So as we deal with you, you know what our objective is and why we give you the counsel we give you. And these girls are going to, we're just going to share even about that purpose. And why we are suggesting that for a period of time in your life, these 4 years, that you concentrate on your walk with God and not get into those patterns that can get you into bad relationships really quick. So we're just going to start just as we talked, and all of a sudden we look very formal up here instead of very casual like we were. Yeah, I know you can't even talk among yourselves now, but there were some reasons why we do it the way we do at the BSU. Would somebody like to start it?
Well, I know for myself, I didn't marry until I was almost 25. I didn't date a lot through high school and college, but I still, there were a lot of wrong patterns and wrong thinking that I had based upon the movies I'd seen, the books I'd read, the soap operas I watched, whatever it was, they all influenced me. And it took a long time for God to begin to show me what His plan is and how He wants us to interact with the opposite sex and even with each other as women. And that is why I highly encourage girls to wait. I think it's very valuable. And when I look back, I'm very grateful for the time I had for 25 years. You know, and those really was 6 years in college and then 2 years after, 3 years after, where I had a time to focus on my walk with God and a time to learn how to minister to other girls, because that is what I use now. And sure, I could have learned it after I was married, but it was much, much easier when I was single. There were things that God taught me as a single woman that I'm glad He taught them then instead of in the context of marriage, because it would have been harder. And so that's why I and Dave will encourage you to wait, and we'll encourage you that those 4 years you're in college focus on ministry, focus on learn how to lead Bible studies, how to walk with God, and just kind of think in terms of marriage is not even in the picture until you're after 22 or close to 25. Because if you're not expecting it, if you don't think, okay, I'm a senior, there's no guy out there, what's going to happen? You know, if that's not your goal, that all of a sudden marriage will pop up when I'm a senior, then you're okay with waiting and you're okay with getting to know these other things. But if your goal is, when I'm a senior, there's going to be a man there walking down the aisle with me as I walk down to get my graduation certificate, you know, then it really blows you away.
I think for me, I made a lot of mistakes in dating.
It's not on. Give her that mic. For me, a lot of you know I was engaged in college, and it was not a good relationship, and it was not the Lord's relationship. And I learned a lot through that, and had it not been from the counsel of some godly people, I would probably be married to him now. I would be married to him now, in the grace of God, of course. But we just so desire that you have the very, very, very best in marriage. Hold it closer to my mouth.
The other mic.
Oh. Anyway, we just so desire that you have the very best, and naturally someone that's been through it can see back and can see some of these things. So we just so desire the best for you. That's why sometimes maybe we may say slow down or something like that. We just really want you to have God's best in a mate.
Okay. Sometimes, too, people have come, you've come from bad backgrounds. In other words, you've not had a good pattern to look at in your own home. That's not everybody. Sometimes there are things in your past that really can cause you problems in marriage. And you didn't get there overnight, and you're not going to get out of those problems overnight. And you're at a beautiful time in your life, and you're at a university where there are lots of people who can give you some help and can help you work through those things and hopefully give you time to see what a godly marriage is all about. We are very much for marriage. I want you to know that. We don't want any of you to walk away thinking, boy, they're down on marriage, you know, just for them and not for anybody else. We are very much for marriage. But we know what can happen. We've seen too many casualties, even those that have been through the BSU, as a result of making some wrong choices, of determining, you know, I don't have to listen to them. I don't have to go their way, you know. Decided continuing to walk in the old patterns of life. So we want to give you an opportunity, and that's what we're dedicated to helping you lay a foundation are a marriage that's going to last, helping you to know when to say right yes to the right guy, and to know to give you some things to consider before you just say, "Ooh, we're in love, wonderful." See, and you go in, and then you've got lots of troubles because of things you didn't see.
And we don't want you to think that we're trying to play God for you. You know, we want you to go to God, and we want you to check things out with God. But there is the reality, because we're older, because we have seen some things, and we have seen some people really hurt in wrong relationships. And if we can spare you that, that's what we want to do. And so we don't mean to play God. And if you ever think that, you need to let us know that so we can help you understand where we're coming from. But we're just trying to help you so you can have the best relationship with the least amount of problems before and after.
If someone on staff discourages you from dating a certain person, there's a reason. And you go find out that reason before you say, oh, you know, they're just down on it. Find out the reason, because there is a reason. We don't just, you know, make judgments, okay?
My question is, besides being a growing Christian and a man with the purpose of ministering to people and making disciples, what are other important factors to consider seriously dating or marrying a man? One thing we thought was that you needed to look at his relationship with his parents and with his peers. Because a lot of times how a man treats his parents is how he'll treat you. If he treats his mother kind of like the old lady, That's what he's going to think of you once he marries you. He might treat you like a queen beforehand, but that thought's going to be in the back of his mind that you're just, once you have kids, you're the old lady again. And with his peers, if he doesn't show respect or consideration with them, that's going to carry over into his relationship with you. A lot of times when you're dating, you're on a performance deal, and you put on your best suit, you know, you dress up for the occasion, not physically necessarily. You do try to look nice, but you're, the way you treat the other person, a lot of times you just see the surface. And so you need to see how they're relating to other people. And another is, if what kind of values does he have? Does he, when he grew up, did he buy everything at Harold's? Did you buy everything at Walmart? Is there going to be a conflict? Or if you buy everything at Harold's and he says, we're on a Walmart budget, can you adapt to that? Other social values. Does he do things that you just don't enjoy doing? Are there activities that you don't have any desire to be a part of? And that's his world. And you're over here. You can kind of end up in two different places. Another to consider is interracial. Now, these are things that we're saying you need to consider, not that we're saying you don't do this. We had a couple in our ministry that the guy was Hispanic and the girl was white. And we told her that she needed to be around his family to find out what she was getting into. And when they got married, she was rejected somewhat by his family. And she had to know that beforehand, and she knew that before she married him, that she was, that they would discriminate against her, and that she wasn't always welcome in Hispanic circles. And then how's your communication? If you've been dating for a while and you're thinking more seriously about getting married and you're still just talking about the weather, you need to be getting a little bit deeper than that. You know, some of your desires and your dreams, some of your values. You need to really talk things out. Then character qualities. You need to look at his character. And now he doesn't have to be Jesus himself. You know, Jesus was perfect, and you're never going to meet someone that's absolutely perfect. Jesus never married, so. but you need to look at his character qualities. Are those the ones that you can live with? Both the positive and the negative. If he jokes around a lot, like my husband likes to joke, can you live with that? You know, after a while, you get tired of that. If he's considerate, you need to just look at those things. And you also need to know the negatives. Because when you're marrying him, you're not going to change him. God can change him if he wants to, but you're not. And if he is not a picker-upper in the house, does not keep his room clean, you're not going to make a difference in that. And all you do is nag, 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 and that's the negative. You need to accept that and let God work on that area. Another is to have, does he have a biblical perspective of the husband's role and his responsibilities? Does he know that he's supposed to be the leader? If you're the initiator all the time and you feel like you're the one that's responsible for that, are you willing to marry someone that's going to let you lead? Is that what you think God really wants you to do? Scripturally, he's supposed to be the leader. Now, are you doing something that, are you trying to force him into a situation that's not right? Another is, well, I guess that was basically it. Oh, the finances. Is he financially free? There's a lot of couples that get married, and especially out of school, in debt. And we knew one couple that they started off in debt, $4,000 at least, owing to the government for school loans. And he wanted to go to seminary. And those loans have to be paid back. Are you going to be in bondage? Another two is, are you unequally yoked as far as education? Now, you can't rule that out. You know, if he's not as well educated as you are, are you willing to live with that? Is that going to be a factor that's going to cause conflict further down the road, thinking, you know, I have a friend that she's got a master's and she's married a guy with an associate's degree. I said, Scripture, there's nothing you can say that will cause you not to marry him. But if this is going to bother you, you have to deal with that now and figure out if you want to live with that. And she's decided that she does. And so you can't make a hard and fast rule on any of these things. I mean, we can't say he has to do this and this and this. You have to know that what you're getting into, and you live with that. You really have to assess that.
If we were talking to guys, we would be telling them they need to look you over real good. Mm-hmm. Because you can make or break a man. You hold it in your hand. You have the power to make him a success or just nearly to destroy his life. And that ought to make getting married very serious. And, you know, you really do. The question had to deal with, direction in life, or what was it, something besides the spiritual. So that's what we're trying to do, is to share other things that can really, because we've seen it destroy marriages, just like to be financially on different footings. You know, it can cause such problems and people just can't handle it, they bail out.
We had a couple in Connie that we worked with, and he was real used to spending a lot of money, and his folks were quite wealthy, and she was just a real hard worker. She was from a large family, and they got married. And he just essentially wanted her to be the one that made the money, and he'd work here and there, but he had no ambition or drive, and he didn't see that as his real responsibility. And I felt so sorry for her. And so I think it's really important to look at how do they handle money, and are they thinking about future as far as working in a job, because that is their responsibility.
And you can go through Proverbs and find a lot on character, and like it talks about a man of anger and talks about fools and sluggards, and you can really use that to help you evaluate his character and whether he has the kind of character in his life that you want. You can also use Proverbs to help you begin to pray for that man that God will bring into your life someday, that God will begin to build these qualities into his life. And that can be an active way that you can prepare for the future, even though you can't go out hunting and looking and knocking on the doors to find him, so to speak.
I think another quality that's really important to pray is that of his self-image, that he has a good self-image, that he accepts himself, because that's going to make a lot of difference in your relationship. And a lot of these things, you know, they're not there. They're not perfect. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that at all. But they're working on it, you know, like their relationships with their parents. It may not be great yet, but they care about it. They're working on that relationship.
Yeah, and we'll testify that our husbands are very different from when we married them, but there's that basic thing that they are moving forward, and daily they are seeking God and seeking to obey and walk with him and to work on those things that God shows them in their life instead of just ignoring it as if it didn't matter.
And Scott and I were very different socially background. The first time I went home with him, I bawled after I got back, because our parents were so different. And that was one of the things I had to really work through. You know, could I live with that? Because, you know, when you marry a family. You just don't marry that person. So even though we were very opposite, I felt God really used that for both of us. But it took that willingness to, am I willing to accept this in his life? He in my life.
Another issue that will drastically affect your family is whether or not you are to work outside the home. You need to find out what he thinks about that. Do you have a biblical conviction? Because biblically, what we see is that basically the woman is in the home. Culturally, we see something totally different. And we see the consequences, in a sense, I think, of the woman choosing to work outside her home, especially after children are there. So you've got to deal with that issue. Because you'll find some men want more things, and they'll want you to work. I mean, it's just no question. You're just going to work. I don't care if you want to stay home with the baby or not. See? And other men will not want you to. And if your heart's set on it, I would suggest you delay marriage. Because
I don't think that's what God intended for the Christian home. And I'm pretty strong on this issue. Just because I think somebody's getting cheated, and it's the kids. And the husband too, of course. But I think, you know, if you want to work, go work. You know, if there's a need, and I don't want to get into this, this could take all morning. But if there is a need for you to work, there are some creative alternatives that you can do whereby you can be the mother and the wife God intended for you to be. And it's like in all of life, when God says, what is it in your hand? What are you clutching? You know, well, God, I've got to do this in life. And I think God just says, okay, what are your plans? Are you willing to lay it down? Are you willing to let God change you? I don't want to stand up here, none of us do, and say, you've got to adapt yourself to what we think. But we want you to say, open up your hand. Let God change it if he wants to. So that when you walk out into life, you know that God has led me, and I'm going, and whatever I'm doing, I'm in obedience to the Lord. Okay? Anything else?
Just real quick, one thing that I think we've kind of touched on a little bit is just the expectations. And that was one thing that Dennis and I really hadn't worked through, just what our expectations were for marriage. And it was a lot based upon what we've been talking about, you know, family backgrounds and things like that. And I feel like that would be really helpful if you could just sit down and write down, what are your expectations for marriage? And are those based on what God's values, or are they based upon what your family values or your friends' values? And I think you'll begin to see, you know, the differences there, and you can really focus in on what is God's will and what am I trying to do to please my parents or others.
Okay. One question came up. If you're interested in a fella and he's interested in somebody else, how do you change your focus, or how do you get off of this high center?
Is that one more time?
Okay. Okay. The question was, if you are interested in a fella and he's not interested in you but in someone else, how do you keep from thinking about him all the time?
I see it a lot as just a picture of God's sovereignty, that he's in control of that, and that he promised me he would withhold no good thing from me. And I was single for quite a while, and I use that verse a lot, Psalms 84:11. That the Lord will withhold no good thing from me. And if it's a good thing, I would have that guy. I'd be dating that guy. But, and God can change it at any time he wants.
I think for me, when I've been in that situation, it's just focusing on others, just maybe trying to develop a relationship with other girls or getting involved in some activities that would maybe take your mind off that. Because I know for women, we tend to daydream a lot, and I think if we can really fill our mind with other thoughts, that would really help us not to focus on that. And then to realize too that there's going to be pain involved, and you just can't get rid of those emotions necessarily, and not to feel guilty about the fact that you long for that or that it hurts, that that's just a part of it.
And I think it's important we're real honest with God, that we don't deny feelings or thoughts, but we take them to God and then we leave them there, knowing that he is our Heavenly Father. He does love us. We can trust Him. He is sovereign. That's where it's real important we really learn who God is. Because if we know God as He is in actuality, and not often what we've felt through past experiences with other people in authority in our lives, then we can trust Him. And we'll know that, like Pam said, He won't withhold a good thing. And when it's in His timing and the best for us, that will come along. And He's not ripping us off.
Here's a question that goes right along with that. How do you keep your eyes and thoughts on God rather than on other people, especially on guys? And I remember somebody really helped me out when I was dating Scott, because, I mean, that is a constant problem with us women. We get our focus on guys quite easily, and I just told this lady that discipled me, I said, you know, I was just thinking about him so much, and she said, well, you know, when he comes to mind, begin to praise God for him, his quality, for this guy, you know, for Scott's quality, and then began to praise God for God's qualities. So what it was basically, you know, I wasn't denying, you know, I'm not going to think of them, you know. It wasn't denying them, but it was basically changing them into, oh, Lord, I praise you that, you know, like maybe I saw in Scott, he's very accepting and tender, and just, you know, say, God, you are so tender. You are so accepting. You know, you think of his attributes, and then you're ending up praising God rather than thinking about him. But it's not a denial.
And perhaps a refocusing. Mm-hmm. As you do with anything that you're trying not to, you know, any bad habit maybe that you're trying to get rid of, or a thing you're trying to change your thought patterns with, you're refocusing, and perhaps on ministry, on the Lord, on ministry. Get involved with girls, with some other ministry opportunities. That will minimize it. As Pam says, you're not denying it, you're not, you know, but you're trying to remove the intensity of just the constant, you know, like, that you're under the control of those thoughts, and you're not. You don't have to be. But if you choose to meditate, then you're just going to be caught up in this self-pity party. You know, she's got him, I don't. You know, that's
I think that was such a help. I know those of us who were involved in college ministry when we were in college, just we really cared about the girls that we worked with, and we spent a lot of time thinking about them and their needs, and we had more to think about than just a guy. And that was just real meaningful. You're putting your life into other things, just thinking about your mate someday.
This touches on the area of trusting God, and we've talked about the sovereignty of God. What are some ways that reveal in a girl's attitude, actions? What are some ways that reveal that we're not trusting God? I know that you're supposed to pick up on it. They say they weren't one of the questions.
Well, I think one of them is if a girl feels like she has to initiate. You know, if she has to use her eyes to capture a guy's attention or use her body or, you know, when we go into a room, are we trying to capture someone's attention, some guy, or are we really focusing on the purpose of why we're there? And see, if you're able to trust God and believe he's sovereign and he's going to provide, then you're not out there initiating and looking because, you know, God will take care of that for you. And I heard a girl share one time, a guy had asked her, how will you know when God's really brought that one special person into your life? You know, what if you miss it? And she said, would you think God would prepare a 10-course meal and never ring the bell? And you know, when you think about your Heavenly Father and His character, would that be consistent with His character? To prepare this person for you and then never let you know when He's there? Not at all. And so, you know, that's why it's so crucial you get to know who your God is. You can trust him and believe that he really will do that. Then you don't have to do it. You can trust that just as he brought Eve to Adam when it was the proper time, he will bring you to that person and begin that to build that relationship. And you won't have to initiate it. And I know for many of us, we could testify to when that relationship began with the person that we are now married to, we were pretty oblivious to it until we were almost right in the middle of it because God put it together and brought it. And it wasn't something that we had to go out and pursue, unlike other relationships we'd been in before.
One explanation of the Lord is a lamp unto my feet. A lot of times we think of a lamp as like a flashlight that shows the way out in the distance. When they were talking about a lamp, they were talking about a lamp that just showed right where you were, just one step ahead. And I think a lot of times we want the flashlight that shows us the whole end. And what we need to worry about. Yes, we do set some goals, but what does God want you to do today? And if we start thinking, stop this idea of I have to have someone in a year or I have to have someone by the time I graduate, and you start setting all these deadlines on things that you don't have the responsibility for, God has that responsibility, not you, then just be content with that day. And I had a friend that became a Christian in Milwaukee. She was involved in Campus Crusade. She was around all these guys. No one surfaced. She went to Fort Worth, went to seminary. All these seminary guys, godly men, no one surfaced. She went overseas and taught. No one surfaced. And God told her to go back to Neenah, Wisconsin. Who's heard of Neenah, Wisconsin in this group? It's a little bitty town. And this is where she grew up. And God said, get your relationship right with your folks. She did that, and she just saw a death of a vision, you know, where, you know, how many godly guys are there in Wisconsin? And there are very few evangelicals in Wisconsin, and that would have a background similar to hers. And she went to a small church, and there was one guy. And that's all you need is that. today, and he'll take care of mom.
I think we all, you know, we all have those needs to be loved and accepted and to be somebody cared for, and so often, I think one way we see that we're not trusting is when we're just grabbing, meet my need, whether it's a guy or a girl. And there's a verse in Psalm 73, I believe it is, it says, whom have I in heaven but thee? And besides thee, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. And I know for me, even in marriage, I grab at things, you know, but just to realize that really only he can satisfy. And, you know, I think the guys are looking for a woman whose trust is in God and who's still and knows that God will meet her needs. And they'll be thrilled when God wants to provide that man. But just that stillness in our heart. And that doesn't mean, I know one of the questions we had was, what is a gentle and quiet spirit? And sometimes we think that it's only the plagues and the melancholy that can have a gentle and quiet spirit. The plagues or the sanguines really wonder if they can ever have it. I don't know anything about temperament. But it's not saying, a gentle and quiet spirit is not saying that we can't have that personality that God gave us. It doesn't mean that we're not excitable or anything else, but I believe a gentle and quiet spirit is when we are resting in the Lord. Our personality is showing through and blossoming, but we have that be still and know that I am God attitude, which takes a lifetime to perfect.
That verse that Pam said was 73:25 and 26.
Nancy, why don't you deal with the area of touch?
Touch. Okay. I'm supposed to deal with the area of touch.
As a means of not trusting the Lord, as a means of using other methods to get a guy.
Touch in your eyes.
Bait.
You know, it's real apparent when the world, all the movies that you've seen and everything else, most of the women initiate, and whether they do it through their eyes, you know, it'll talk about in Proverbs how the adulteress captured a guy with her eyelids. And I think most of you, if you've been aware of what's going on around you, you've learned how to use your eyes in a way that isn't always a way that pleases God, of, you know, seeking someone out, and whether it's you blink a lot or whatever. And I heard a girl share one time, and it was real helpful when I was single, and it still is, just that when you're talking with a guy, you look at them in the face, in the eye, and communicate. You don't blink your eyes a lot and look away and have this kind of, because that projects a mysterious air about you, which can be very alluring. But you look at them straight on, you communicate what you have to say, and, you know, that's it. You know, you don't look and then look away and look and then look away, or, you know, just however you might have learned how to use your eyes. Just be careful that you're very honest in how you use your eyes. But that's also true with touch. You know, a guy is, a girl is very, the thing that affects a girl is touch. A thing that affects a girl is sight. And a guy is sight. What did I say? A girl is sight? I think both things affect a girl. Anyway, and the Saturday after the Glen, not this next Saturday, but the next one, we're going to have a little seminar. We're going to deal with a lot of this in a lot more depth, but just about your inner beauty and some things about that and how that affects outwardly. But the thing about touch, you just need to be real careful, because we're not made up like a guy, things that we think wouldn't bother anybody because they don't bother us can really affect a guy. And because God has made a guy so vastly different than us, and it's a very good thing, we just need to be careful. So that means, you know, be careful about all the back scratches and all the hugs. Uh-huh. Well, I was talking specifically about touch and how you would use your body and how you sit. Ways that you sit can be very tempting to a guy. You know, if you sit cross-legged a lot, like Indian style, that can be very hard on a guy. There's things about the types of clothing you wear that can be very hard on a guy's thought life. and he'll have to really battle whether he's going to go off into the temptation that Satan would like for him to go off into, or whether he's going to keep his mind back and keep it righteous before God. And so those are some of the things we'll deal with on that Saturday. But just that we learn to be careful, that we're not real handsy, and we're careful with how we use our body, how we stand, how we sit. You know, do we project that we are women and that we are ladies, or do we project that we're just kind of one of the guys and sit and stand like they do? You know, God made us very unique creatures, and we need to rejoice in that, and we need to be all that God made us and not sell out for a lot of the stuff that the feminist movement is telling us and try to become just like a guy. That's not how God made us, and there's no virtue in that for us.
Girls, we have to realize that we are responsible for causing sin, men to sin. You think, well, that's their problem. I mean, you know, if they think that, you know, it's okay. I mean, I'm not responsible for what they think, but we are, in as much as lies within our control. And so what we're saying here is a frontal hug can send a guy up a tree. I mean, and, you know, most girls, a lot of Christian girls, if you're into any kind of physical relationship with a guy, a lot of times what you're wanting is a little affection. You know, you're not wanting to go the whole nine yards. Well, what you're doing generally is starting a fire. And so, you know, most of us plan to, you know, we like to start the fire, but we don't plan to cook. But guys don't think that way. And if they have any trouble with their thought life, and girls, there's not a guy on the earth that doesn't have trouble. And before marriage, I mean, I didn't know how guys were made. I didn't know that what I was doing was saying, sick 'em, you know. And then I was having to say, hey, whoa, you know. I mean, I was just saying, yeah, uh-huh. And so when they progress, you go, hey, whoa, what's going on? You know, and you think, my word, you know, he's an animal. Well, you know, you have just communicated, you see. And you don't know what you've communicated. See, I mean, we don't talk about that area. You know, what kind of signals am I giving? We don't discuss that in a dating relationship. So we have to be very careful. The scripture talks about eyes, about flattering lips, about the way we dress, and what Nancy said, the way you sit, it causes guys problems. If they can see up the side of your skirt when you sit, be real careful to tuck it in. They can see halfway up your leg. It's not, I mean, they wouldn't have had as much trouble with a pair of shorts as they will if they can see where they're not supposed to see.
They will with shorts if they're big-legged.
Oh, well, that's, yeah.
You know, and then if you sit there not like a lady and so you see all up the back, you know, mm-hmm. you have to think about all that.
Help each other. Help each other. If you see somebody sitting kind of crazy, you know, I mean, I saw a lady the other day, their legs kind of apart, and she was sitting across from this married man. I was wanting to sit there and go, you know, and what can you do? I mean, and you know, it just embarrasses the person, or this tape's going to be interesting. With your blouse, you know, gaposis, you know, and they can see right halfway through, you know. Well, you've got to watch those things. I mean, we laugh, but girls, a lot of guys are coming to the staff for counseling because of the way we dress as women. I mean, how do I control these thoughts? You know, it's all they can do. So be sensitive.
And see, as you become more of a woman and dress like one, they'll become more of a man. And they will treat you more like a woman. They'll start opening doors. They'll start doing some... I know one time when I was in college, a girl challenged me to wear a dress or dress up every day to class that week because I tended to wear overalls and go real grubby. And I thought, oh, Sandy, I don't think I can do this. But I did it. And it was real interesting because I had more doors held open for me that week. I felt different about myself that week, so I communicated differently. It was real good exercise.
Good comment.
And it's really a way of loving your brother, mm-hmm. serving them. And a lot of times we just can't believe how it could cause them those problems, or we think, well, they're just dirty, we need to deal with that. No, God made them with a drastic physical size. And so
Okay?
And they'll get more on Saturday.
You'll get more on Saturday. Although on Saturday, we wanted to deal with the physical beauty, too. That's going to be the main emphasis there. There'll be a small amount of inner beauty because we've talked about that quite a bit and at times, but we want to deal with the physical beauty, and we'll tell you more about that later. Okay, just a few little random things about going to God first rather than your friends to find out what, you know, it's so easy. This guy's asking you out and you're dating him for a while, and then all of a sudden you don't find out what God thinks. You go and say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, is this a good deal? Learn to go to the Lord. More important what God thinks is, he knows that the heart of that man. And you need to find out what God thinks, not just your friends. Godly counsel is valuable, but often with your peer group, it can be biased. Not that there's not valid help with your peer group. They can see blind spots and that sort of thing, but it's a godly counsel from an older woman is very valuable in a situation like that. Any other thoughts y'all might have on that?
One thing I think you need to remember, too, each one of us has different experiences, and we can't tell you this is how it's going to happen exactly. So when you date a guy, your relationship is going to be totally different than anybody else's. And so you can't compare with somebody else's, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be, or he's supposed to do this, or I'm supposed to do this. You've got to take it to God. And figure out, you know, what is God wants? We're unique. We're not carbon copies. And I met my husband a different way than anybody else here met their husband. And I was younger than anybody else here probably that got married. But God led us each through different series of circumstances. And you've got to trust God at some point. You do take your godly counsel, but you've also got to trust God in certain things to speak to you.
And that thing about godly counsel, make sure it's someone who knows you and someone even who knows that other person. Because you can go ask someone who's walking with God and godly and they can give you some general guidelines. But if they don't specifically know you and know the relationship and know the guy, it's real hard for them to be real specific. And so you want to seek out someone who really knows you.
Don't just keep going to counsel. They give you the right answer.
Yeah, right.
That you want.
Okay, what about brother-sister relationships? We had some questions on that and about getting how easy it is to get involved. Pam, I believe you had some.
Here's one that says, is there anything wrong with being good friends with a guy? These are all related. What if you're good friends with a guy and you begin to have other interests in him? What should you do? And if so, can a girl continue to be friends with a guy if there's a stronger interest on her part only? So the first one, is there anything wrong with being good friends with a guy?
No.
I think there's no harm as long as you're not defrauding. And also, what do you mean by good friend? Are you sharing a lot of intimate things with him that you really shouldn't be sharing? Harder to break. You have to be really careful. It's fine to be good friends. One of the questions I think we have is if you break up with a guy, can you still be good friends? That's where you start really defrauding them, because it's really difficult to be good friends with someone that you were really close with and not have one of them expect the relationship's getting back together. You just have to be really careful with that. But I don't see anything wrong with just being friends.
I think there's a thing there about time. You know, if you truly are just good friends, then you have to think about any other brother in the Lord I have. Do I spend the same amount of time with them? And do we do the same kinds of things? Because if they tell you it's just good friends, but you start holding hands or you start kissing, well, there's a conflict there. And you have to decide, and that's where you need to ask and continue to define the relationship. And if the signs of affection aren't consistent with what you both have communicated your relationship to be, then you're defrauding each other. And then you need to decide, okay, are we really saying that we really do like each other and we were dating because we were beginning to do these signs of affection? Or do we need to really back off? Are we spending too much time and are we sharing too much of our hearts and lives?
I think it's important, too, to ask ourselves, okay, we have this good guy that's a really good friend. Do we have girls that are really good friends to us? If we only have a guy that's, we're only friends with guys, we really
You know, Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? And I think, girls, that you're at an age, and the guys are at an age, we are not playing games. And to think about being good friends, you're running a risk, because unless you're willing to marry that good friend. And I think sometimes we have a security. We find our security, use that as a security situation, where we've got this good buddy and we can tell him everything. And then all of a sudden, what happens then when he's your good friend, and all of a sudden he starts dating someone else, and he doesn't spend as much time with you like he did before? Can you turn it loose? And that's a very hard situation. And some of you have found yourselves in that situation. You know, and you realize when you become jealous that something that was more there in my heart than just friendship. You were just kind of hoping it would go a little farther. And see, it's kind of a deceptive thing too, when you get into that and hang on to that relationship. Just, you know, and he thinks it's a good friendship, and you do too, but watch what happens when it's taken away and he gets involved with somebody else romantically.
I think a lot of it just depends on the commitment, because I think it's so important that we have friends. Our friends are the guys. That was one thing with Scott and I. We were friends, not just people that did something together all the time at all, but as a group, we were friends. And that really helped us as we started dating, because we started dating as good friends, and then our marriage, we were best friends. But you know, I think a lot of it just depends on what kind of commitment you're talking about, because I think it's so important with brother and sister relationships that that's where a lot of the dating relationships do start, is just in friendships with the guy, treating them as brothers.
I know I was talking with someone yesterday, and we were both sharing about how we had come from poor relationships in the past, and just how it was difficult for us at times to relate with guys unless we were flirting with them, because that's just how we would have related with men in the past. And so I really would encourage y'all, if you're in that situation, to learn how to relate to guys, to develop friendships with them, because that will really help you in your communication skills in the future, and really just knowing how to get beyond those surface, you know, types of conversations that you can get into with someone that you're dating, and talking about the future and all that, and really getting down into how you can communicate with one another.
Plus, once you get married, you can't flirt with every other man out there. You've got to know how to relate to other men and to be honest with them and be a friend in a very general sense, and yet not in any way communicate more than what you as a married woman should communicate.
There was a question. Is it wrong to flirt?
I feel like flirting has an intention of getting something for yourself rather than serving the best interests of the other person. And it's more of a me-centered thing, trying to capture somebody. There's an Ecclesiastes that says, and I find it more bitter than death, a woman whose heart is snares and nets, her hands bands. Whoso pleaseth the Lord shall escape from her. So the godly man, you want a godly man, your flirting's not going to get you a godly mm-hmm. man. And so I dropped that like a hot potato.
They're afraid of girls that flirt, because they know that their heart is not trusting the Lord in this relationship. And so you do the opposite to what you intend.
That's right. And if you don't communicate that you're going to be a one-woman man, that's not right.
That's right. One mm-hmm. that's man, right. Woman.
Anyway, if
one man, woman.
Anyway, if you don't communicate whatever that idea was, see, how are they going to know after you're married? How can they trust you if you have not shown before marriage and throughout engagement and whatever that you're true to them and that you're not out after everybody else's eye?
Let me just share, as we go on to some other things, I mean, not other things, but more questions. Just a few. I talked to some guys. Would you like to know what they think? Okay, and I didn't, I wished I'd talked, we should have just said, hey, a bunch of guys, but I didn't talk to a whole bunch, so I don't know what they all think. But the fact that you need to know that guys are very different from you, and you know that, but not to make fun of them because they're different. Be very respectful. We're hearing from some of you some real put downs to the guys, some sarcasm in joking and that sort of thing. Be real careful about that. Boy, Proverbs talks about the tongue, and when that tongue is not edifying, friend, we're in trouble.
I think think it's real easy after a breakup to kind of put that person down, because in a way they've rejected you or whatever, but, you know, continue to build that person up and not slam him.
Don't be discouraged, they said, when you're not asked out. If you're not dating somebody, a lot of times guys are trying to grow. I mean, they may be far behind you spiritually, and they're trying to get their act together spiritually before they get involved within a relationship. Sometimes if you're in a dating relationship and it's slow, it's going slower than you think, they're pacing it. I mean, knowing that they're, you know, boy, I mean, you can always put the pedal to the metal and go with the relationship. Mm-hmm. Got one word.
I think they can assume that, though, without you doing anything. But there are things that we do that, you know, you may not have done anything. He just might have had all his hope in you. So you may not have done anything. But there are things that we do that lead a person on. For instance, just sharing intimately, and they think once that you shared, you know, a lot of deep things, that you're really, your commitment is higher. It goes with your communication level.
It. The key word is communication. You may just have to... Yeah, and you hate to...
Mm-hmm. He probably was thinking more all the time, maybe. Mm-hmm. Do you think?
Can you date more than one person at one time? Most guys won't do that, even though we talked about that. What do you do when you break, you know, you just dated this guy once or twice and the word gets around and the other guys don't want to date you? You know, it's real funny. If a guy thinks another guy likes a girl, he won't infringe on that. He won't get into that relationship. And it's not fair, but what can you do? I mean, but the issue in a relationship like that is probably communication, just being very gentle. And just letting him know where you stand, and you're sorry that if you communicated anything, but you really, you're not that far in your thinking right now. You'll let him know when you are. Let the guys make mistakes. Make allowances for mistakes in dating. They're not used to this. They're trying to do it right. And they've heard this and they've heard that. And you know, you're coming with some patterns from high school too. Don't forget what you've got in your brain that's used to be fine and all right. And here you are, you know, you've got all these expectations even about a dating relationship. So be patient with them as they make mistakes in dating. Sometimes they're dating just to find out. They don't, you know, they don't ask you for a date knowing that you're the one. And so they may just be dating casually just to kind of test the waters with you. I mean, and that's what, hopefully that's what you're doing. Girls tend to think, ooh, maybe this is the one, you know. Bingo. And so be real careful. And God made man the initiator, not woman. Even though our culture has said, oh, it's okay, invite them out, ask them out. And we have some suggestions for how you can do that in a right way.
Mean I'm not attractive. A lot of times we start thinking, oh, there must be something wrong with me that I'm not being asked out. I went to a high school with 600 and some in my graduating class, and for the senior prom there were only maybe 100 kids that went to it. My high school did not date, and there were a lot of really nice looking girls, and there were a lot of girls with nice personalities. And it was just that there was no interest in dating. So don't start sitting there thinking, I must be a real yuck. Let the guys take their time. You do your part, but don't just sit there and condemn yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that idea of some things that you can do, you know, if you know, because we all need that companionship of guys, and we need to be around guys. We need to know how they think. We need to see how they walk with God and how they minister and all that. And I think sometimes in this ministry, you don't get a chance to see all that. We were on a team that was a mixed team where it was five girls and five guys, and we met together every week. We did a Bible study together every week. So there was a lot of opportunity to really get to see their hearts and for them to see our hearts in a very natural way without any talk of dating, which you all don't always get to see. But you can still do things like on a Friday night, call up another Bible study leader who is a guy and say, how about if your Bible study and my Bible study gets together and goes bowling? You can initiate in that kind of a general sense where there's no one-on-one. It's just a real free, we're all going to go do this. Or, you know, maybe your Bible study of girls invites some other Bible study of guys over and you cook supper for them. Or just in a sense of, and the purpose would be to get to know them, to get to know some of the guys in the ministry, to see who is there. And to just think through some creative ways like that, that you can, with a lot of people, get to know other people, you know, or play games, or even call up one of the staff and say, could we come over on Friday night and use your house for these two groups of Bible studies so we can do such and such, you know, and just try to be creative. It's not like you just sit there and can't do a thing. You can, but it's not that you should call them up and say, you know, Joe, I would really like to go have a Coke with you on Friday afternoon. You know, I don't feel like that's appropriate. And if you want a guy to take the initiative and be the leader, then don't you be that, because then he won't.
Okay, just a few things that we need to move on quickly here. One quick word, just because two people are godly Christians doesn't mean they ought to be together. We've known a couple of godly, there's more than that. But two Christians, real committed, date for a long time, and they just don't feel like God's in it. And that's okay. So don't just assume that because the two of you have discipleship on your heart and you're walking with the Lord, that the two of you are meant to be together. I think a question came up, what about if you're very much alike, temperament-wise? Did we have an answer for that one?
Well, basically, I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, you can compare yourself and find differences no matter what. You know, if you're trying to say we have to be balanced, I don't think you can try to determine what's a balanced personality between the two of you. The key to it is, do you really enjoy being with that person? Is there some pizzazz to the relationship? You know, there was a guy that he started dating a gal in our ministry in Wisconsin, and he told Ted, he said, I just don't think she's very pretty. And that was his attitude. But he dated her. And they fought constantly, but they had never dated a Christian before. And they thought that's the way it was supposed to be. It was kind of supposed to be blah. And they talked about marriage. And they finally came and said, what do you think? And we said, with the way you guys are acting now, I just don't see much hope for it. And we never told her that he didn't think she was attractive. But there was another guy in our ministry that had told Ted, he said, I think Mary's the most beautiful woman I've ever met. Mm. And I wouldn't ever classify her that myself, but in his eyes, she was. And that's the way that person should be to you in your relationship. And not, you know, that it's, you know Marilyn Monroe or Liz Taylor or anything like that, but in your eyes, you find something really attractive about that person, and there's an excitement about being with that person, a real joy.
Yeah, that person will really turn your crank. You know, he really will, and you will become the most beautiful person in the world to your mate, because that's just how God makes it to be.
Right. So you don't have to worry.
Yeah.
See? Yeah. It's easier said than done, isn't it?
I think there are some personalities that just will automatically not attract. I mean, or you might see, for instance, two sanguines together, you'll probably find yourself constantly having fun but never getting anything done. And or two flakes, there might not be a lot of pizzazz, you know, if you're both that way. But, you know, those are just things to think through.
Cholerics would probably drive each other crazy, wouldn't they? That doesn't need to be a prime consideration, although if you find yourself having troubles, you might figure it out that way. Okay, as we look at the girl-girl relationship, we haven't left much time for this. If you don't get your question answered, or if you disagree with anything we said or would like to have it clarified, come talk to us afterward. Don't go away saying, those crazy women, they just think, you know. Come talk to us, because we're available, and we know we probably have raised some questions here. One thing that is a real prevalent problem among girls, Debbie, would you, somebody got a Bible over there? Yeah. Nancy. 1 Corinthians 3:3 and then James 3:13 through 16 is jealousy. Anybody got a problem with jealousy? Okay. Okay, 1 Corinthians 3:3 and James 3:13 through 16. Would you read that, Nancy?
1 Corinthians 3:3, for you are still fleshly, for since there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not fleshly, and are you not walking like mere men?
Okay, in opposition to being spiritual men.
James 3:13 through 16. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in gentleness and wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing.
Okay, girls, this is such a problem with women today, because you see your friend and they're dating and you're not. And girls, those of you that are in a dating relationship, you need to be very, very sensitive to your friend. Not that you don't talk about it some, but don't flaunt it. I mean, don't just constantly be talking about how wonderful he is, you know, and how, oh, he's, you know, this, that, and the other. Be very sensitive. You may be there tomorrow. So just settle down, you know. So be loving and kind, because God's timing is different for each one of us as far as relationships. And besides, this can be a bummer for her, you see, and she just doesn't know it yet. So be real sensitive and watch, I mean, because jealousy is terrible. I mean, it can separate friends. So check your heart. This is a real, and I think this has been a real problem among our ministry, is jealousy. And so when you sense there's jealousy in your heart, begin to pray for the person you're jealous for. Confess it as sin and pray for her. And then try to minister to her and let God do some work in your own heart about that issue. Because we can laugh about it, but it's serious. It can separate you from your fellowship with the Lord.
I think it's real important too, you know, any of the things we've talked about, for instance, if you, yes, I am jealous, or I flirt a lot or whatever, is that, first of all, of course, confess that and admit it to the Lord, but don't continue to condemn yourself because you're that way. Because it's not going to just go away just because you confess it, is it? You know, you're going to be tempted on and on. I think this is one of the things we have to take before the Lord and say, God, I have a real problem with jealousy. I don't want to. I've confessed it before you, but you're going to have to get that out of my life. And, you know, there are things that you can do to help get that out of your life or whatever, but he's essentially going to be the one that does it. So I think it's one of those things we have to lay in the altar, because it's going to crawl off the altar again, and not to condemn yourself. Uh-oh, here I am jealous. I'm a no good Christian. I never work, you know. So there's hope and encouragement.
Another question. Pam, you had several. I don't want to avoid these that deal with some of this.
How do you have a good disagreement? And I think this relates to the whole thing of women. It seems like guys get along better than girls for some reason. But I was listening to Dr. Dobson on the radio the other day, and there was a lady there sharing about friendship. She's written a book on it. And she was saying how one of the greatest needs of a woman is to have a deep friendship, or a few deep friendships. And she was talking about not just single, she was talking about married people.
With other women.
With other women. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we need to think about, what do you do when you have conflict? Do we run from it? Do we explode and not understand, hear the other person out? Do we hold it in and get bitter? Do we go get a new friend? or do we try to work it out? Do we communicate? Hey, this really hurt me. You might not have meant it that way. And talk through it and forgive. And I know when I was in the single era of my life, I lived with 9 different girls at different times that were of the melancholy temperament. And I never understood melancholies. I lived with cholerics, sanguines, and I just never understood that temperament. But God was preparing me for marriage because I'm married to a wonderful melancholy, and I have a melancholy son. And so I think it's so important, all the relationships you have now with women is to make the most of it. Learn how to communicate. Learn how to receive them, to forgive them, and make this a really good time in your life, because it will only help you in marriage. And once you're married, you'll still want to continue with deep friendship.
I think, too, just you need to learn to accept people for being different. That just because they do things differently, think differently, does not mean they're wrong. And we're not always right. I mean, when I got married to Ted, there were certain things he did in his family that we didn't do in my family. And I think that's true with girls. You have a friend that does things totally different, and you think, that's wrong. But it's not wrong for her, and you need to accept that. And it's all right to agree to disagree. You can look at things differently. We have certain political convictions. We have some good friends that are Christians that have different political convictions. They're of a different party. That's fine. There's nothing to keep us from fellowshipping as Christians. And I think that's true in our relationships with other girls. We've all got different backgrounds in some way or another, and just accept them.
I think sometimes we have to be willing to make a commitment to be a friend and not just see it as a temporary thing that, well, I'll just live with this girl this year and then it'll end and that's okay. She was just around me for 1 year of my life. But there will be some girls that you are getting to know now that you will know and will continue to fellowship with the rest of your life. You know, Pam and I lived together after college. For 2 years we were in a commitment with another girl. And even though she and I have not always lived in the same area of the United States, and even though there hasn't always been constant letters, there still remains a deep friendship. And it's based on a commitment that we made back when we lived together, and some of the hard things we worked through, and some of the differences in our personalities that we had to learn to appreciate. But it resulted in a very precious friendship. And that's what will happen to you if you're willing to commit yourself to it, to work on it, and to see it through and not just bail out when it gets rough, because it always will. Every relationship will hit those rough points, and you have to decide to go forward. And that's true in marriage. That hits rough points, but you've made a commitment that says, I'm going to take it forward and not just bail out because it's rough.
God talks about how in every relationship there's alienation and then reconciliation. Alienation, then reconciliation. And often we think, alienation, and everything's over. But if we just see that that's a normal part of a relationship, there will be conflict, there will be hard times, but then there's, you know, our willingness to reconcile.
A question came in the girl-to-girl relationship, and one's emotional, the other's not. How do you minister to each other? And I think what they're saying here is answering that question, is that you're accepting each other. You're recognizing that there are differences, and you... Philippians 2, 3, and 4 talks about looking not to your own things, but to the things of others. You see, what's happening and where our problem comes is we're walking around saying to ourselves, or saying to the other person silently, minister to me. You meet my needs. And we're finding, and if they don't, and they're different, they're saying minister to me. And so then we've got selfish relationships. If I'm saying, how can I minister to her? And she's saying, how can she minister? How can I minister to her? Then it changes the whole complexion of the thing. And so we're learning acceptance, communication, and what you're experiencing in your female relationships will only enhance your marriage relationship. If you don't like something in your roommate, guess what? You're not going to like it in your husband either. But you're learning how to accept and get along and how to resolve differences. Living together can be, see the thing about in girls, you can just move off from them and avoid. I mean, I don't like that, so here we go. See, but you can't do that with a husband. You've got to learn to resolve conflicts. That's the reason when you come to us and talk about problems, we say, go back to the person. Talk it through, work it out, confess your sin. Now, another thing, too, just because we're out of time, I don't hear anybody else moving, and so until we do, we'll keep going. And that is, reach out to some new girls that are around you that you don't know. You know, we're so secure in our own little huddle, aren't we? And we just kind of hate to get involved with anybody else. Know this, too, that you can only have a very few intimate relationships with girls, friendships, I mean. You can only have a few. Don't anticipate thinking, I've got to have 10 best friends. You can't do that. You can't keep those up. Then you've got another circle of friends, though, that you have fun with. You may not share the deep things of your heart, but you have fun with those people. And then there are others that you may have even less occasional fun, you know, than you do with another group. But have a know people and get reach out, because there are girls that are hurting because they don't, you know, they just don't know people and nobody seems to care. But I think with girls, do reach out and touch. They need your touch. That's why we go to guys sometimes. We just want somebody to touch us, to love us, and it's fine. In our society, it may not look too good sometimes, but we've got, in our Christian love, we can do that in a good way, in a healthy way. Do we have, I thought we were supposed to be through, 12:10. Great. Oh, good.
And on that one question about what if one friend is not emotional and the other one is, I think there are ways that you can kind of draw that person out. That person may not be just real in touch with their feelings. And some questions, you know, you might begin asking when you're together about different things, is like, how does that make you feel? Or why does that make you feel that way? Learning to draw them out in the feeling realm of their mm-hmm. life. Because they just may not have ever had a chance to do that.
Now, what about our tongue? And we had some thoughts and some questions that dealt with. Oh, sorry. Did you want to say something, Susan?
No, I'm just holding it because it's getting heavy.
Well, if you look in Scripture, there's a lot to be said about you can go to the Father, and then also in James, in the second and third chapter, or third and fourth chapters, it talks about the tongue and how it's like a flame and how it just starts a lot of fires and you can't control them. And that's true. When a word goes out of your mouth, you can never bring it back. When it's gone out and it can hurt. And James 3:10, James 3:9 and 10, it says, "With the tongue we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse man, whom God has made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come forth blessing and cursing, and another word for cursing is slam. My brethren, these things ought not to be that way." And a lot of times we think it's kind of funny when we slam somebody or we're sarcastic, but there's always one grain of truth to slam or sarcasm. And that's why it's funny. And that one grain of truth is going to hurt. Because I don't know how many of you have been affected by sarcasm or a slam. You've heard it. And inside, you're hurting. You're outside, you're laughing, but on the inside, you're hurting. And when I was in high school, I used to be real sarcastic. I had a friend. She was real brilliant. And she was a national merit scholar and everything. And we just were sarcastic together and just had a good time. And one day, she said, "Sarcasm is of a weak mind." And she's being real sarcastic because, you know, that's the way we were. And I started thinking about that and I thought, that's really true. And I thought, that is weak. You know, that is not a strength. And in Don's Psychiatry by Charles Allen, he said, "Those of great minds discuss ideas. People of mediocre minds discuss events. And those of small minds discuss other people." And I think we need to be really careful on how we talk about other people to their face and behind their back. And really careful about our time. I have a lot more verses, but...
That's powerful enough. Pam, do you want to say something? You had a question, I think, that dealt with... Well, okay, let's see. Let me just see if I remember the question. It had to do with... this is back in the guy-girl relationship, too. It's you're interested in somebody. A person is interested in a guy, and she tells her friend or tells someone, and the friend goes and tells the guy. And now she's very uncomfortable. And perhaps that's a lesson more so on sharing, but how does she handle that relationship? And that was kind of a dealt with guy-girl, guy-girl-girl relationship. So you want to... Anybody want to talk about that? What can she do?
I think one thing she has to do is just give up her relationship, I mean her reputation to God. That's an awful position to be in. You just feel so weird. But just first of all, give up, say, God, that's what happened. I feel weird. But my reputation, I want to give it to you. You're in control of what other people think about me. And that will give her some freedom there. You had some thoughts about... sharing it, you shouldn't.
Yeah, one thing is if that person, if that guy finds out through another person, and you told that person in confidence, you have to get straight with that person that betrayed you, and talk it out, and don't be accusing or anything, but explain what you feel and how that's affected your relationship, and get that resolved, because there'll be a lot of bitterness and anger towards that person, and you need to get that right. And also, because of that, you need to learn to be discerning in whom you share with. It's good to be open with people, but you need to be careful on whom you share what you share. Because, like, I knew one gal that if I shared anything with her, the whole world would know. And I just had to learn that I didn't share anything I didn't want the whole world to know. And so if you don't want the whole world to know, then don't tell that person. And that's not saying that person's a bad person. It's just that you need to be discerning on who you talk to.
I've noticed, too, just over this last year, just girls putting pressures on other girls to be transparent. And I think it goes along with that very thing, is just because another friend of yours or another girl isn't transparent with you doesn't mean that they don't want to be a friend of yours. But just that they're really trying to think of what would help you in their sharing with you. And just not, and just us being careful not to put pressures on others to be real transparent.
And that's a voluntary thing. Mm-hmm. Even though you hear that it's good, you see, you should not try to force someone else because you want to, quote, I've heard the expression, spill your guts. Then that is not good if the other person needs to voluntarily do that if they choose.
To finish off that question, maybe around this guy, just to treat him like your brother, even though we feel awkward about him, just treat him like another brother, and don't try to egg him on. Don't totally avoid him, because it'd be real easy just to want to avoid him. But this, or even if it comes to the point where you have to say, hey, I know you found out I like you. Listen, let's just get this straight. You're my brother, you know. You may just have to be honest with him, but nothing to egg him on and not to avoid him. Like, there's a verse that says, treat your brother, the brothers as your brothers.
Do you have questions at this point? We're going to deal with some more, but do you have questions at this point for clarification?
Well, it's kind of an overall application question. No. All these areas. How do you? We come with different. You come with different expectations from high school. You come with all these different past experiences. You come with just a plethora of things. How do you start applying all this information and really getting into your life without becoming discouraged?
I'd say just start off with one thing. Just pick one thing out of what you hear and say, God, please work this in my life, and just kind of focus on that one. And I'd gone to Goffert a long time ago, and I heard all these things you need to do, and just kind of overwhelming. And then a couple years later, I went back again, and I had tried just to apply one or so things out of that. I was amazed at how many things I had applied through that period of time. brought some of those things in his time, you know, and it's just God's grace, and he doesn't dump everything on us at one time. You know, we might, but God's really gracious, and it's amazing what things you do apply without you realizing it, that it's in his time.
I like the verse that says, his commandments are not overwhelming. And that just has always encouraged me, because when I go to conferences, it was like, I'm going to change myself, and I was so, you know, I get really upset, but surrender it to the Lord and let him do it, and he'll direct you in the different areas. I have two good questions I just found. How submissive should you be before marriage?
I knew a couple in our that had been dating for a while, and they started, he decided that it was a good idea to have a checking account together, so they pooled their money and put a checking account together. They also did their laundry together. They did all these things together. And we tried to share with them that that was too early. You know, that's the kind of thing you don't do until actually you sign that marriage certificate. And I think a lot of times our concept of submission is to do those kinds of things that are, and they're way too early. We've got to wait until we're a lot further down the line. Well, in our culture, when you accept an engagement ring, you can still break that. Now, in the Bible, in their culture, your engagement was your marriage. You just didn't consummate it until a certain date. But you were married. But in our culture, your engagement is not your marriage certificate. And so you need to still realize that you're under God's authority first until you get across that altar, I think. Mm-hmm.
Submission is more than just, you know, when you're in love with somebody, it's easy to think submission is just doing everything they want you to do. I mean, just yes, 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 yes. Okay? And submission is more an attitude. It's not, it's a willingness after God brings you together to let the man lead. It's a willingness to fit in, let God put the thing together, and that the two of you, as he leads, you can walk together. Two can't walk together unless they're agreed. And that is God's way of bringing us into agreement. Somebody's got to lead, and somebody's got to follow. And so nobody, no woman, I just don't think there is a woman alive born submissive. You can be quiet and flag and all that, but you have got a little stubborn will in you. And let me give you, I do think, though, that you need to learn submission somewhat before you get married. There are limits. And let me give you an illustration of something I did that was bad. My first experience with submission. Max was a BSU director. We were dating. Max was a BSU director in Dallas, and he was asked to come to North Texas State to speak to BSU. So he asked me to go along, and this guy he was working with. So we were going to take my car because it was bigger. He had a Volkswagen Rabbit, Volkswagen Bug. And so my car was a little bit bigger. So we went and he spoke, and we got back in the car, and the guy went to sleep. I thought, I mean, I'm sure he couldn't have been asleep that quick because we were still in the same town. But Max stopped for gas. So Max says, I'm going to... He was going to get out of the car and go to the restroom. And so before he did that, I said, well, I'll pay because it was my car and I'd been driving it all that time. And so, I just thought I'd pay. And so he said, no, I'll pay. I said, no, I'll pay. No, I'll pay. So he goes to the restroom and I go pay. Woo. Well, I didn't know that much. I wasn't focused in on submission. But later on he said, I was trying to teach him something because he has a problem that every time he's with a girl, he lets the girl pay. And he said, I was trying to teach Jack that it's the man's place to pay. He said, don't you ever do that again. Okay. Okay. But, okay, now that is but he loves me anyway. Isn't that amazing? I bet I've done that again, too. If the truth is known, I know I have. Be real honest here. But, I mean, you know, it's not that you walk up to a situation and you say, now, am I going to be submissive or not? See, more submission is more reaction. And then you think, oh, boy, I blew it. You know, you realize you did it. But, see, it's submission is I have decided that's the way I want it. Now, I may blow it and have to ask forgiveness. But, now, so I want to give you kind of a picture. It's the only way we can live together. If I choose, if I'm going to lead the you know, circus, it's going to be a mess because that's just not the way God intended it. Okay, now, but there are limits to submission. If a guy before marriage says, go to bed, so what, we're going to be married tomorrow, you know, what's the difference? Just a piece of paper? No. So there, and you have to check each situation as it arises. Is it possible to be submissive in this area? See, if he's leading, you know, it is good for me to follow, for me not to be so opinionated, and to defer to him. You see, but that's not a total picture of submission. It'd take a good whole message here to really adequately handle it. But
and along with that. There's that idea that you're accountable to God also, and you do have a walk with God, and you can think. And just because some guy comes up to you and says, I think it's God's will that we get married, but that's not what God's told you, you don't just kind of, well, okay, whatever you say. You know, that's not right. Because there's going to be tough times later, and if you don't know personally that God led you into that relationship, and it was just as specific for you as it was for him, then you're really going to struggle. And so it's just that reality that you walk with God too. And he might suggest things once you're engaged as far as the physical that's going farther than you think you're ready for. You don't have to go along. You know, you need to be faithful to communicate how you're feeling and why you feel like this isn't appropriate and that you've prayed about it and work it out together. But it's not that you just kind of lay down and roll over and do whatever they want like a little dog would. You know, when your little dog comes up to you and rolls on his back and you scratch his tummy and he does whatever you want. You know, you're not that. That's not an adequate picture of godly submission.
Let me hit on this one other question. If you've had moral failure in the past, when, if, and how do you bring this up in a dating relationship? When, if, and how?
That's something I feel that you would not bring up in just a dating relationship. I think you should be well on your way towards marriage. I think it should be before engagement. You're talking seriously about getting married and about engagement. And I think they need to know what they're getting into. But if you share that with everybody you date,